This is the Leonard Lopate Show, but I'm not Leonard Lopate. I'm John Turturro, and I'll be your guest host today. My first guest today is someone I kind of know for the past 24 years.
You go way back.
We were born 3 weeks apart, and we both grew up fanatical Knicks fans and have remained sufferers until this day.
Let me ask you a question before you introduce me.
Okay.
You're not going over the Brooklyn Nets, are you?
No.
Thank you.
I'm blue and orange.
Thank you.
I'm blue and orange.
Thank you. What about your son?
The Nets represent ABA.
What about your son?
I think he'll remain.
You think?
I hope. Yeah. Listen, he likes the Baltimore Ravens, so that's it. Anyway, we've made 8 films together.
More than that.
And his latest, Red Hook Summer, opens today, and I'm pleased to have Mr. Spike Lee with me now.
My man, John Turturro. What's happening, baby?
Okay.
I'm glad to be here.
Nice to have you here. Congratulations on your new film.
Thank you.
I enjoyed it very much. And I was curious just to sort of start out, because everyone will ask, you know, it's a story. Has it been in the works for a long time? Mm-hmm. But how did it sort of come about?
Well, one early Saturday morning, I called my man, James McBride, said we got to have breakfast. We met at the Vion Coffee Shop, corner 61st and Madison, diagonally across from Barney's, the best coffee shop in New York City.
Mm.
And we were just talking about what we felt, where cinema is today, Hollywood, black cinema. I just bought a new Sony F3 camera, digital camera. And I said, look, I got this camera. I got some money. Let's write something. And we both have teenage children. And we talk about how when was the last time we saw a black teenager film that wasn't a gangbanger?
Mm-hmm.
And then it just evolved from that. James grew up in Red Hook.
Oh, really?
He grew up in the church. The church you see in the film, his parents founded that church. It's the New Brown Memorial Church. And then when Carmelo got traded to the Knicks, I did a thing on him, a short thing for internet, for Boost Mobile, and we started the garden. We drove to the Red Hook Projects. We went to the building where he was born.
Mm-hmm.
Not born, but where he grew up. 79 Lorraine Street, apartment 1C. So all these things just started to form.
What kind of neighborhood was Red Hook when James McBride grew up there?
It was Red Hook before gentrification.
Right. I mean, that's a really fascinating
history. I know. I mean, it's like, as you know, John, it's like, it's stuck. I mean, you have to really want to go to Red Hook because
right.
the Beekwee comes right down, cuts it off from Carroll Gardens. There's only one bus, the B-61. The train, Smith and 9th Street, that thing's been closed for years.
Right.
And as you know, a good friend of ours, Bud Schulberg, who wrote On the Waterfront, that was supposed to have been shot at Red Hook.
Right.
But the mob said, we'll kill you. You, Kazan, and Brando, and they had to shoot it in Hoboken.
In Hoboken, right. But so that's where it was inspired by,
yeah.
On the Waterfront.
Right. And but the mob said, hell no,
right.
Take to New Jersey.
So they wound up in Hoboken like the Nets.
Yes.
So this is when you're talking about Red Hook, it's very different from
right.
other parts of Brooklyn because
right.
you're by the water and you are cut off.
Got the Brooklyn Terminal there. I mean, the Queen Mary 2 docks there, right there in Red Hook.
Right. And today, Red Hook, what kind of neighborhood is it now?
Well, you still got the projects. Excuse me, still got the projects in the middle, and gentrification is taking place
That's
all
right.
around it. But here's the thing. Say like the projects are like a box. The people in Red Hook don't venture further than the street that faces their projects, so whether it be the takeout Chinese food place or the bodega. They don't, I mean, it's amazing. They don't venture out into the
so it's like a little city.
Yeah, they don't
itself.
Venture outside into the gentrified part of Red Hook. And I say, we don't feel at ease. I mean, it's not like they're going to be arresting like that. Just don't feel. It's amazing. It's really some village mentality. That's why we had that line. That, the young girl in the film, Chaz, she's sitting there at Valentino Pier, and she's looking across the water
right.
at Lower Manhattan and says, I've only been to city. I've only been to Manhattan twice.
Right.
It's like the Emerald City.
Right. Well, people don't realize that for a lot of people who grew up in the in different boroughs,
right.
like going to Manhattan is a big psychic journey, you know?
It takes a lot.
It takes a lot to go there, you know? Mm-hmm. So the church that you filmed in, that still exists?
Yes.
Right?
We shot this last summer.
Right.
18 days. And 3 6-day weeks.
18 days.
3 6-day weeks.
Wow.
And that's, James, as I said before, James' parents founded that church.
Is there the relationship between sort of the younger people, the hustlers who are on the basketball courts?
The Bloods?
Yeah, you know, and the uh-huh. gang type of mentality. Yeah. Do they keep very separate, or is there a kind of, in the film, there's a little collision, but not that much?
Nah, the Bloods and Red Hook, many who appeared in the film, they're not getting the good word. at church. They're at the church of, I got to get paid.
Right.
And I got to do what I got to do to get paid.
Right.
And a lot of times when you have that philosophy, people end up dying or right. locked up, and that's unfortunate.
Is that is there a separation between, you know, that group and the church going group?
Well, they are not that much intermingling, but some, like Box's character, played by the fine actor Nate Parker, grew up in the church, but at a certain point, they like say, "I'm out of here."
I see. I'm John Turturro. I'm here today for Leonard Lopate, and I'm speaking with Spike Lee about a lot of things, including his new movie, Red Hook Summer, which opens today. This is WNYC and WNYC.org. Okay.
We got that out of the way.
Yeah,
right?
We got that out of the way. All right. I was curious because the character of Flick, the young boy who
right.
was born in Atlanta,
right.
and he's interested in filmmaking. Is that sort of a? I mean, I know you were born in Atlanta.
Yeah, but
did you just kind of use that?
Used that based upon my children were very much interested in, you know, technology and
right.
telling stories. But when I was 13 years old, I didn't even know what. I just went to the movie. I mean, filmmaking was so far away. 13 years old, I thought I was going to play second base for the Mets. So nothing
right.
to do with
but you, but you, but you've always been interested in technology. I've always seen you with all the newest little cameras. You know, when something comes out, so I could see you if you were born in this generation. You know, with that iPad.
Oh, if I was 13 today,
right?
Oh yeah,
yeah.
But not 13 back in 1970,
right?
Which I was there. Game 7.
I know that. That
Game
know.
7, ladies and gentlemen. Willis Reed. I was there.
I only listened to it on the radio. I listened to Marv Albert. But he uses it like a shield
right.
a lot, you know, in the film, right. which is interesting, the way he holds it. And
he's hiding behind it.
Right.
I mean, he doesn't want to be there. He grew up in upper middle class, suburban Atlanta. He doesn't want to be in the hood. With these in the ghetto in Red Hook, does not want me going to church, does not really like his grandfather he's never met before, and also he just lost his father in Afghanistan.
Right.
So all these things are happening to him at one time.
That's an interesting relationship, I mean, him and his grandfather, because...
Played by the great Clark Peters of Wire fame. Many of you might know him as Detective Lester Freeman. From The Wire. He's also now plays the Mardi Gras Indian. I can't forget his name, but the Mardi Gras Indian in the Treme.
Right.
Fine, fine actor. And the kid is, his name is Jules Brown. Jules, who plays Flick, and Tony Lysaeth, who plays Chaz, and Sincere Peters, who plays the young kid for the flashback, all of them went to my junior high school. There's a great drama teacher there. His name is Mr. Edward Robinson.
Wow.
And so when I wrote the script, I said, I know I'm going to find these teenage actors in his class. I would just sit in the back of the class and watch.
What junior high school was that?
When I went there, it was called 294 Rothschilds at the corner of DeKalb and Carlton Avenue in Fort Greene. The school was so bad they had to change the name. Now it's called Ronald L. Emmons School.
I see. Wow, that's really interesting.
I knew I could find the young actors I wanted in this class.
And the teacher is still there?
Yeah. We just shot this last. Yeah, he's still there. And then while we were shooting, he stayed on, to keep the kids focused.
Well, she was wonderful. The girl plays jazz. She's really full of life.
Tony Lysaev. And as you know, John, children with stage parents and taking acting lessons, all that stuff, you and I both don't like that type of force. Yeah. We like natural acting. That's why I felt that I could go find these kids in Mr. Emmons' class.
I really like the chemistry between the both of them because he's so dry. He's like a dry martini, and she's like so effervescent and bubbly. And,
mm-hmm. and that's the way that's their real personalities, too.
Right. I thought that was really charming because at that age, it's such an awkward age.
Very awkward.
And
you remember when you were 13?
Yeah. I mean, I remember.
Had you kissed a girl when you were 13?
No. I sat next to a girl and that I really, really liked. She had beautiful hair.
You liked it in her?
No, I liked her a lot. But I used to, I was really, really shy. I was painfully shy at that
age. You and me both, baby. And then we broke out of it.
Well, those guys who had mustaches, when they were 13, and they were usually the most popular guys. One interesting thing in the film is how you deal with religion,
mm-hmm.
because you seem to show both sides of it, the good and the bad.
Right.
And I was just curious because there's a gray area in everything.
Exactly.
It didn't seem to be critical, but it also,
I think we were kind of critical.
Well, that's what I'm asking you.
Well, I co-wrote the script with the great novelist James McBride. His most famous thing being The Color of Water, which is on New York Times bestseller list for like 2 years. And James grew up in the church. I did not grow up in the church. The only time I went to church was when my parents shipped my siblings and I down south. So our grandparents made us go to church. But
you didn't really grow up.
No. James grew up in the church three, four times a week, stuck in there. So that was not me at all. But I've always, John, as you might notice, I've always liked films to deal with the dilemma of the choices people make and consequences of the choices. So this is just another film with that inherent theme, and how people, and once people do those choices, how they react, how to impact that world. Can they come back? Can they redeem themselves? Or they just go adrift the rest of their life?
Mm. I'm speaking with director Spike Lee. His latest film, Red Hook Summer, opens today at Landmark Sunshine, AMC Empire, AMC Magic Johnson Harlem, and Bam Rose Cinemas.
Yeah, I'm going to be doing the Q&As and introducing the films there today, right there in Fort Greene.
So go there. And we'll have more after a break. Coming up later on the show, Sam Zambaris talks about founding the program Pathways to Housing in 1992 and how the organization has found housing for hundreds of people. Plus, Barry Edelstein talks about the Public Theater's Shakespeare Initiative and the challenges of bringing Shakespeare's plays to prisons, homeless shelters, and senior centers. I'm John Turturro, in today for Leonard Lopate. This is WNYC and WNYC.org.
WNYC receives support from Cultural Arts Partner, the Queen's Museum of Art, presenting Target Passport Fridays 2012, a free weekly outdoor festival of international film, dance, and music, Fridays at 6:30. This week celebrates the culture of Taiwan. Details at queensmuseum.org. TechServe. This Saturday in Breezy Point, Queens, electronics like computers, cell phones, TVs, and more can be recycled at the Lower East Side Ecology Center's e-waste recycling event, sponsored by TechServe. Details at techserve.com/recycling. The New School. Hosting a university-wide fall open house night. An opportunity to learn about continuing education, pre-college, and degree programs. Tuesday, August 14th at 6 p.m. More at newschool.edu/openhouse.
When Donald Trump wanted to turn acres of Scotland's coastline into a golf resort, Anthony Baxter started filming. He quickly got lots of advice.
I hope you've got a good lawyer. If you're going to take on Donald Trump, you're going to need one.
This is Alec Baldwin. This week on Here's the Thing, the director of the documentary You've Been Trumped. Listen to my latest show this Monday at heresthething.org.
Hi, I'm John Turturro. I'm here today on the Len and Lopate Show, and I'm speaking with Spike Lee, whose new film, Red Hook Summer, opens today. We are discussing the role of religion in your film, and one thing that interested me was you hear these sort of monologues that he talks to when he's speaking to his flock.
The sermons,
right. I can say monologues because I'm an actor, right? Yes, sermons. It interested me because it covered a wide variety of topics.
Right.
And sometimes, you know, I was questioning whether, you know, people are just always agreeing or are they questioning what he's sermonizing.
Right.
And how do you feel about that? Do you feel like sometimes religion that doesn't make people question themselves, or do you feel that they get the answers from it?
Well,
that it keeps them, you know, down sometimes?
The black church has been the foundation and the bedrock of us, of our existence here in the United States of America. And black preachers, bishops, whatever term you want to use, have almost a Superman status in the community. And people see them as they're receiving their words from God. Mm-hmm. So everything they say is from the Almighty Himself. Now,
that could be problematic.
And that's what this film's about.
Right. Because he's just a human being.
He's just a human being. And we all know human beings can be corrupted by power. And so these are the certain things that we shed a light on, hopefully, in this film, Red Hook Summer.
Right. Well, that's really interesting, because that's what we read about a lot in the newspapers. It doesn't matter what religion, you know.
Catholic Church.
Right.
Synagogues. Football programs.
Right.
Basketball programs.
Right. That's right.
Schools, all this stuff.
You know, it's just in the Olympics. It goes on and on.
On and on.
It goes on and on. So, also, I noticed in the film that there was a character delivering Sal's pizza by the name of Mookie from a film.
Mr. Mookie.
Now,
you want to hear the story?
Yeah.
Well, at the end of Do the Right Thing, the citizens of Bed-Stuy, Do or Die, burnt Sal's pizzeria to the ground. And Sal, not having the vision to see the gentrification, which was going to come to Bed-Stuy, said, I'm getting the hell out of here. So Sal took the check, his two sons, Pino and Vito, and they set up shop again in Red Hook. But the thing was, Sal could not find somebody to replace Mookie because he's... The people he was hiring from Mexico, from Ecuador, they were going to the wrong address.
Wrong address.
The pizza's cold. People calling
complaining, the cheese on one side, and so he called Mookie up. And Mookie said, Sal, I'll come back on one condition. You got to put some sisters and brothers on the wall.
Well, I was happy to see him.
And then Sal said, Mookie, we got a black president. So you know I had to put some black people on the wall. And that was the biggest hug between Sal, Pino, Vito, and it's all love in Red Hook, Sal's famous pizzeria. And Mookie is the world's oldest pizza delivery man.
I like that.
But he's the best, though. He got told, his mother told him at a very young age, whatever you do, be the best at it.
That's right.
So
well, I hope to
some
see him
people
again.
Discourage him still delivering pizzas at 20-some years later.
Well, I actually think it was a great thing, you know, seeing, because you've done this before. You
right.
weave the same characters throughout so many of your films.
Right.
And Nola Darling from Do the Right Thing also plays Mother Darling.
She's Jehovah's Witness now.
Right. Yeah. But, you know, it was interesting. This film reminded me of Crooklyn a little bit.
Yeah? How so, John?
Just from, it showed things from the perspective of children.
Right.
And I thought that there's something really... you know, refreshing, because kids can see things that we can't sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
And I enjoyed that part, you know,
you.
Of the film. Another thing that I thought was a really nice touch was your splicing in footage that was in Super 8.
Right.
I'm a big Super 8. It means a lot to me when I see something in Super 8.
That beautiful ektachrome look.
It's just...
You got a camera? You got to get a camera.
Yeah, I mean, I had a camera like
but
that.
You got to get one, though.
Yeah, so is that your camera?
Yeah,
that you shot?
They got new Super 8 cameras, so it's not... The ratio is not a box. It's like 16:9 now.
Oh, really?
So you don't have to expand it.
Well, I really like that. And I wanted to ask you, I mean, it's, you know, what's the purpose of this vintage feel? But basically, what does that kind of sort of mean to you when you show
it? It means... when I was young, when we would shoot, it's home movies.
Right.
And the video, look, I know we have technology. I know people trying to replace film. But there's something about the grain and the color of Super 8 was just, I mean, I react to it the same way you react to it. I mean, that's yeah. us growing up.
Yeah, I really love that part of it.
And I shot the Super 8 stuff, too.
Oh, did you? Yeah, well, it looked great. It looked great. It really looked great. And obviously, there's a lot of music in the film. I really enjoyed the organist, who's a real organist.
John the Baptiste. No, he's a great jazz pianist from New Orleans.
He was fantastic. I mean, and you just knew how much he was enjoying himself and commenting
on everything. And like the Black Church, he was there to... play with Bishop Enoch's sermons, so if he needs some punctuation, he would go crazy on the
and
organ.
That was all done live, right?
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah,
it's all,
yeah.
I mean that doesn't, you can tell.
Mm-hmm.
And then you also have Judith Hill.
Right.
And Ruth Hornsby. And
yeah,
how did they get involved?
Well, I've known Bruce. I met Bruce Hornsby through Branford Marsalis, and Bruce wrote songs for Clockers, for Bamboozled. And Judith Hill's a great young artist. She was supposed to be on a This Is It concert, those 50 concerts with Michael Jackson in London, but you know, we know what happened.
Right.
And I just met her. I said, are you signed? She said, no. I told her about the film. I said, I'm doing this. So she started sending me songs, and now she has 10 songs in a movie.
Yeah, she's a wonderful singer.
Singer-composer. Yeah, right. She wrote all that stuff, too.
Really?
Yeah. So when me and you going to work together again?
Well, I'm waiting, but you're going to be doing a new film
right.
this fall. Tell us a little bit about that.
It's Old Boy, the great Korean classic cult film starring Josh Brolin. And we're getting ready to go soon. Also, very quickly, I just finished another documentary. It's called Bad 25, which is about the making of Michael Jackson's Bad album. August 31st is going to be the 25th anniversary of the release of the album.
And when is the documentary?
Oh, we're going to world premiere at the Venice Film Festival.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Wow. I'm looking forward to seeing that.
I wish you'd be in pre-production.
No, I'm going to see that. I'm John Turturro here today on the Leonard Lopate Show, and I'm speaking with my good friend Spike Lee, whose new film Red Hook Summer opens today. And it's interesting because you've made a lot of documentaries.
Right.
And I was curious, you know, how did you sort of, I know that you're always, you like to draw your fiction stories mm-hmm. from real life.
Right.
But how did you get into making a documentary?
I've always liked documentary. The first documentary I did with Sam Pollard, great editor. It's called Four Little Girls, and it's about the bombing of the 16th Street Baptist Church.
It's a wonderful film.
Thank you, in Birmingham, Alabama. But for me, when people ask me, John, do I have to put on another hat, flip the switch? I say no, and the reason why I say no is because I'm a storyteller.
Right.
So if I'm doing a 30-second Nike commercial spot with Michael Jordan, that's a story.
Right.
If I'm in Brazil doing a video with Michael Jackson, that's a story. If I'm doing documents, if I'm doing features, I'm doing short films, it's all storytelling. So since I consider all storytelling, I don't get caught up like saying, oh, you know, with the different mediums.
Right.
And
it's all part of the whole...
Telling the story.
Body of work.
Telling
that's
the
right.
story.
And
you've done that too, man. Your last joint in Sicily, man, that thing was amazing.
Right. Thank you. But I think it's very inspiring to work with real people, you know, and
right.
Because that's where everything comes from anyway.
Exactly.
And especially musicians, they're a lot easier to work with than actors sometimes.
A lot easier.
They just do it. They just get on with it.
Mm-hmm.
I was curious about... When you made something in New Orleans,
right.
and then you made something in Brooklyn, and there's all these, obviously, you know, there's racism that's down south
mm-hmm.
versus here. Is there a big difference, do you think, you know?
Well, I think historically, racism in the north has been more undercover, disguised.
Mm-hmm.
We're down south.
Right, it's right out there.
It's right out there.
No, it's right out
and
there.
They're not trying to fake the funk. They'll tell you exactly, you know, what you're dealing with. And a lot of times I've heard people tell me they prefer, you know, just people just being blunt and letting you know.
Right.
Instead of trying to...
Well, that's really interesting. That's really interesting.
Because a whole lot of liberals, you know, will smile on your face.
Right.
And then it's the okey-doke.
Right. Well, there's not a real interaction.
Right.
There's not a real interaction. Mm-hmm. There's not a real sharing of...
You brought the subject of race. With the one thing that happened for me, that didn't happen for me, I never, ever thought that with the election of President Barack Hussein Obama, that racism would be eradicated overnight.
Mm-hmm.
But there were people thinking that because we had this, all of a sudden I kept hearing this term, post-racial era.
Yeah.
Like it's going to be abracadabra, hocus pocus, eeny, miny, mo, shabam, snap your fingers, poof. And I just...
Well, it's actually... You know, in some ways, it's cemented and inflamed certain groups.
Yes. This election will be very, very interesting.
Very interesting.
Very interesting. And it's starting to heat up now. School's about to come back.
Yeah.
Summer's over. You really got September, October. That's 2 months. That's just coming down the home stretch. And it's neck and neck.
It's going to be very close.
Very close.
Very close. I keep thinking that maybe 1 6-year term is better than 2 4-year terms because you're campaigning for, you know, half the time. You know, it's
right.
I know that they had brought that up years ago, but then it was shot down. Now you're a man that wears many hats. You're also directing, or have directed Mike Tyson in a one man show.
Have you seen it yet?
No, I have to see it.
Sunday's last show.
I have to get there.
John,
so
Sunday's the last show, baby.
I will be there. before the last show. I didn't. It was a short run.
We got 12 shows.
I know.
John, we got to take what we get, baby. Okay.
How did you get? I mean, I know you know Mike a long time.
Longer than known you.
Yeah, and I remember.
Mike did it in Las Vegas.
Yes, he did in Las Vegas.
I heard about it.
Right.
I called him Mike. He got me a DVD. And I've been in discussion with James Nederland of the Nederland family. You know, the Nederlands and Schuberts, they run Broadway.
Right.
He's been trying to get me to direct something on Broadway for a while. I gave it to him. I said, let's try this. We flew to L.A., met with Mike and his beautiful wife, Kiki, who wrote the play.
Mm-hmm.
And here we are almost at the end of the run. Mike is the most interesting man. I know that I'm not talking about the beer commercial.
Right now.
But he is the most, one of the most interesting. And you know this.
Right.
He's amazing. And I've never met John, never met somebody so honest. John, you and I know, we all know people, which shall remain nameless, who will bend your ear off about how great they are, all the great things they've done.
Right.
But when it's time to own up to some other stuff, mum's the word.
Well, this is a guy who's really like a naked, emotionally naked.
Yes,
you know, person.
I've never seen that before. He is. He will talk about the great things in his life. He will talk about the horrible things he's done in his life,
mm-hmm.
with the same honesty as he's talking about being the youngest heavyweight champion in the world. It's amazing. Every night he gets a stand ovation. And they're going to take it around. They're going to tour around the world with this show.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Do you think you could ever imagine putting him into a fiction film?
Oh, yeah.
Maybe he would improvise a little bit?
John's going to happen. All you have to do is put makeup on the tattoo.
Right.
That's all you got to do. That's what he wants to do. He doesn't want to keep playing himself like he did in Hangover 1 and 2.
Right.
Which was great.
Right.
But he says he's a character actor. And he could do that.
I mean, I really would love to see that because I think he's...
Put him in your movie.
Yeah. Well, if not this one, maybe another one. So, I think he's just riveting when you watch him.
Usually when directors leave a show, open a night, they're out of there.
Right.
I've tried to come back as many times as I can. And last Sunday was the last time I saw the show. And at the end of the play, there's a montage... Because he had not, this is a change. He had done this before. Every night's different. Anyway, there was a montage at the end of the show of his children. And he said, I didn't finish eighth grade. And my daughter, whose picture was on the projection right there, he said, my daughter just got early acceptance to Duke University, turned it down, is going to Brown. I didn't finish eighth grade, and I have Ivy League kids. Ivy League kids. He was arrested more than 30 times before he was 12 years old.
Yeah, I know.
This is phenomenal.
Right. Wow, that's a great experience. But I'd love to see him. I think he could too. I think he could. He could give a great performance. In a fictional story. So.
Well, let me know when you're going, so we hook it up, so you go backstage.
Okay.
Because you know he loves your work.
Right. Man. Well, I'm a big fan of his. I'm a big fight fan, with all my old 8mm films.
I know, and you guys could talk for hours about boxing because he's like a boxing historian.
Yeah, no, I know. We've shared a lot of old fight stories from Jack Johnson films to Jack Dempsey to now. I've been speaking with director Spike Lee. His latest film, Red Hook Summer, opens today at the Landmark Sunshine AMC Empire. AMC Magic Johnson Harlem and Bam Rose Cinemas. He's going to be there to answer the Q&As and face the firing squad. Spike, I thank you so much.
I'm bringing a bulletproof vest.
No. You don't have to do that. Thank you so much for joining us today. And I wish you, all the best.
Thank you. And I'd like to say, John, thank you for having me. And I love you.
I love you too.
We go way, 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 way back.
That's right. I think we knew each other before we actually met each other.
Yes.
That's right.
Thank you.